Welcome to the Mellow Mama podcast, where we talk all things conscious parenting and conscious, respectful living. And today we're going to talk about marriage, specifically how to have a more conscious marriage and how to look at marriage from a conscious lens while being conscious parents. I'm going to be talking with the Freemans, Jocelyn and Aaron, and I'm so excited for you guys to get to know them and have access to their amazing content moving forward. They have such a wealth of information online. You guys, Instagram is a great place to find them as like a starting point. They have a book. I don't know if your guys' book is available now, but we'll get to that. And an amazing podcast that I myself have loved listening to. And I want to kind of, before I let you introduce yourself, I want to kind of talk about your podcast introduction or bio, whatever you want to call it. It says, "This podcast is all about couples and the three C's: communication, conflict, connection. These are not skills you automatically have when you get into a relationship, but that need to be developed to overcome the inevitable challenges that will come up. Couples who listen to the podcast say, 'Are they watching us?' because of how extremely relatable and practical to your day-to-day life together these topics are." How appropriate, in my opinion, to talk with you guys specifically, especially because I know your parents. I know that you love the conscious parenting philosophy as well about marriage. Because for me, the communication, conflict, and connection pieces, and how you say that these aren't skills that most of us, I would say 99.9 of us, don't have in our toolbox out of the gate when we get married. Same thing, they apply exactly the same way to marriage as they do to the parent-child relationship, because it is really a conscious relationship that we're striving for as moms and dads. So with all that said, so excited to start the conversation. Would you mind just telling me and everyone listening your story and a little bit more about who you guys are?
Yes, and thank you, Caitlin, for everything that you said and introducing us, and everyone listening, hello. And yeah, excited to share a little bit of our story. I'll try to summarize a decade or plus, because I feel like our story really started even before we met. You know, especially for me, I was actually the first one to start personal development. So before Aaron, I ended a previous relationship that I thought was quote unquote the one, but it was really coming from like the old paradigm of relationships. And I started working on myself, doing seminars, reading books, and I knew the kind of partnership I wanted to have. Met Aaron, and he wasn't quite on that path yet, right? Like, he was still going out with his friends, and he wasn't introduced to self-development until I brought it into his world. So from that place, we really, really dove into the growth journey, the evolution, becoming conscious together. And that's taken many different shapes, twists and turns, books that we've read, seminars we've gone to, but we've grown up so much together. And the one value that has never changed for us, even though we have evolved in many different ways and have taken different interests, is that we value growth. And that's something that we just really both believe in, even if we're into different things. Like, he might be into a different teacher that I'm not into right now, and vice versa. So there's a lot to our story, but what I'll just share as an introduction is just how different our upbringings were, and that really impacted our communication, the way we both handled conflict. It was really, really different. And for me especially, I want to be a cycle breaker. My parents got divorced, and it was a really nasty, unhealthy divorce to see. And it's just been my mission to be a cycle breaker. And we actually had our baby girl, who's now 17 months. We had her kind of quote unquote later than I think a lot of people do. So we've been together almost a decade, and you know, she's 17 months old now. So we have had a lot of years together. We've evolved a lot together. And now, you know, having this precious soul to care for, I feel has illuminated so many new opportunities in our relationship, and has been challenging in some ways, but beautiful. And anything you want to say to the introduction?
No, I'll kick it over to Caitlin, and I'll add pieces to my story as we go.
Perfect. I love all of that. There's so many things that I took just from that little introduction. I love that you said growth is really the foundation of everything for you guys. And Tony Robbins is somebody I quote all the time. I just love him and his books and his crazy, like, weird giant man voice. And he always says, if you're not growing, you're dying. And I really think that relationships are something that we nurture like a plant. Like, we have to water them. We have to care for them. We have to have, like, goals for them. We have to have a vision for our relationships. And that's something that I focus on in my course, you know, just having people create this blueprint for what they even want. So many people are like, yeah, you'll love your kids, so it'll be easy. You'll figure it out because you'll love them. You can love a person so much, but to live with them, to function in a household dynamic with them, from, you know, a million different aspects, it is not something that actually comes naturally, I would say, to the average person, just because of behaviorism's roots in our societal culture, how we basically perform for our value as people. We perform for our lovability. We put little scales on people's lovability, like, you're about a 6.5, right? Like, and we're not doing this consciously, but I think that it trickles into all of our relationships, especially our marriages. And then what's worse is that from, like, a media standpoint, marriage looks simple and easy, or at least love does, right? Romantic love is romanticized. People have this picture of what love is going to look like and what finding the one is going to feel and be like. But really, it is an ongoing growth process. I don't really like referring to marriage as work, because I feel like I'm all about mindset. If you guys have followed me, you might know that about me. I'm very much about, you know, developing a great attitude and mindset around everything that I have to do in my life or that I get to do. And marriage, I feel like if I set myself up to believe that it is work and laborious and intensive, that I might grow to resent it or feel like it's a burden, as opposed to what you also said there, an opportunity. That you mentioned having your baby basically is like giving you more opportunities for growth. And that right there, I was like, yes, I love that mindset shift, because so many people look at this and they're like, that's just, it's going to be a hard season in your marriage. When you have kids, it's just hard. This is hard. That's hard. As opposed to looking at it, okay, of course, it's going to be different and there's going to be changes and it might be challenging. But to look at it and just even use the phrase opportunity will, I think, lighten the load a little bit, because you'll be looking to grow through the process. So I think that's beautiful. And I want to move in a minute to how our upbringing shapes our relationships, especially marriages. But I wanted to kind of talk for a second about how it must be from a husband's perspective, Aaron, to learn, feel like you're learning from Jocelyn, because this is a really big point of contention for many conscious mothers that learn from me. A lot of my course students say, you know, this was really pivotal. This is life-changing. I can't get my husband to listen to what I have to say or understand my perspective as valuable. Maybe if somebody else said it, like a guy was talking about it, he might listen. But for many of the women that I work with, it's very difficult for their husbands to feel like their wife is teaching them something. And it sounds like your guys' personal story has really been 10 years of that. And you guys eventually, you know, like learning alongside each other, growing alongside each other, which is just so beautiful. But little round of applause for you, Aaron, for even being in that position of vulnerability and feeling like, okay, like I have something to learn, or this woman can help me grow into my, you know, best potential or best self. So could you comment on that? You know, was it hard? Or is it hard?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it's really one of the main questions. And so, I mean, is it hard? Yes. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with a number of factors. One major one I think of is this principle that we talk about that's also existed out in the relationship space about your love account. So it's really your subjective feeling of how loved, how connected, and importantly for men, how respected you feel. So think about that as a level that's constantly going up and down, like almost either making deposits and withdrawals into, say, a bank account, right? It doesn't stay steady. You have expenses, you make deposits. And unless you're really paying attention to your bank account, you might find one day that you go to try to buy something and there's not enough funds there, right? So from a marriage perspective, the level of your love account goes up and down based on how you communicate, the tone of voice, your attitude. It has to do with
affection or not.
Yeah, affection. It has to do with how you resolve conflict, whether you feel that conflicts actually get resolved or not, or you step over them. Is there actual repair? So there's a lot that goes into it. So getting to your point, if you really take a step back and try to understand, well, what level is my love account? And even more so, what level is my partner's? So, I mean, I assume that the majority of your listeners are the female partner. So really understanding from your male partner's perspective where his love account is going to show you the level of his receptivity to your invitations to grow. Mm. If his is very low, he's going to have a very low receptivity. And you'll have to dive deeper, but if I don't feel respected, I'm going to have a very low willingness to step into an invitation that Jocelyn has for me to be better. Now, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I'll subconsciously think to myself, you need to be better. You have taken all these deposits from my love account and now you want me to change? The problem with this is a lot of men are not expressing this openly, right? So I need to be better in my assertiveness. I need to let Jocelyn know, for example, where I do feel like I'm at. What are the needs that I have? What agreements do I need in place? Where do I feel like I haven't been getting or receiving love? And I can take my own part in that too. But unless you have a love account that's high together, things are going to feel stressful, challenging. You're going to be more reactive to each other. And there's not going to be a receptivity to step into growth when asked.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect answer. And also, I think a perfect segue into a more important part of the conversation that dives a little bit deeper, which is where I love to live, and that is the reparenting process. Like, I think that while our little love meter, our love tank, whatever we want to call it, it could be that we think we are filling it up for someone, right? Like, we are meeting their needs, or we think that we're meeting their needs. But there are some times where the conditioning that we have from childhood really almost makes it irrelevant, almost how well we've loved on our partner and made them feel seen, heard, understood, just like we do with our children. There could be times where just giving new information to someone could be received as criticism, because in their life, especially their childhood and adolescence, being told one to do something or to change something or to have a different outlook was basically rooted in basically saying, like, you're not lovable when you do X, Y, or Z.
Kind of like punishment, something like that.
Exactly. It could be, I mean, it could just be manipulative. It doesn't necessarily have to be that it was punitive in your childhood. Personally, I'll use a personal example, even though it's, you know, it's so vulnerable. I feel like it's so helpful for people to understand on a real life, you know, in a real life example. So my husband grew up in a household where things were very, there was a lot of like passive aggression. It seemed very nice and frothy and sweet on the surface, but conflict was really frequent, but then never actually addressed or resolved. And then there was this sort of like, I would assume, underlying hum of tension in terms of like the energy and the marriage and the household, as well as a lot of shame and resentment toward the children and each other. There was not a lot of affection. And so in our own marriage, my husband his tendency has always been to be very defensive, like quick to receive any sort of feedback as criticism, even though it's completely objective information, right? He's just ready to receive that information from a defensive standpoint as a coping mechanism from childhood, where it absolutely was an indication of
you know, how loved he was in that particular moment, or, you know, his character was being judged, as opposed to today, right? Like, you're working with me. If I simply share something, from an objective place, has, or just simply express a need from an objective place, it can often be received as, oh, okay, well, apparently I'm not doing enough, or apparently I'm not good enough, or I can't do what you need me to do, or I'm just the worst, right? A lot of these like passive aggressive, again, coping mechanisms come to the surface, that make it really difficult for him to clearly communicate his needs, or even set those defensive coping mechanisms aside to see my needs. And that's been something that's been a continuous growth process for us, right? Especially considering that my husband had to basically become a parent overnight with someone who teaches people how to have great relationships with their kids. And then, of course, that was his background, right? So it was difficult for him. And I think that's where a lot of women might be facing as well. In fact, I'm almost positive that that's what they're facing as well. This sort of like, you can't teach me something because that means that I don't know as much, which means that I'm not as good, as lovable. And it all comes down to our childhood and adolescent experience for the most part, which is kind of crazy, but also really helpful insight, at least for me personally and for many of the people that I know, when trying to move into what you guys are referring to, like developing this awareness of helping our partners feel seen and connected with, and to be able to communicate our needs clearly. I think many people walk around not even aware of what they need because they're just in this performative role-playing state from childhood. And it's not until we can kind of peel back some layers, and I'm sure that's probably what you guys have been doing for the last 10 years, peeling back these layers and saying, okay, where does this subconscious belief system even come from in me? Why do I get defensive about that? Why does that make me riled up? Why does X, Y, or Z thing or behavior from my partner get under my skin? Exactly like we do as conscious parents. I'm assuming that's really been at the root of your growth as a couple. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Love so much of what you're saying, that our personal development journey has been about observing patterns within ourselves and just each other, the dynamic, and going, okay, where's this come from? You know, what's either my perception of this situation, or, you know, where's this link to what I observed with my parents? And I think, so our work, a lot of it is focused on conflict. And in particular, our book that you were referring to at the beginning is called The Argument Hangover. We kind of zone in and really like to focus a lot on the repair stage, because of course, communication is all about preventing conflict. And there's so many elements to communication. There's during conflict, which I think you talk a lot about triggers, right? We even get triggered by our children or triggered by quote unquote tantrums, which we like to think of as big feelings, and triggered by our partner. But I want to speak to the repair stage for a minute and what you're referring to, because that's a big place we saw a difference in us. So Aaron, hope you don't mind me speaking for you a little bit, but what he saw growing up was there'd be like maybe a little moment of tension between his parents, maybe an annoyance, and then his dad would stop talking and then, you know, just leave the room. And he never saw a resolution. For me, I saw really intense conflict, yelling, name calling, slamming things, being hurtful to each other. And then I would just be wondering, like, is everything okay? Like, what is going on? And to me, as a child, that's where I felt a lot of worry. And so in relationship, I would feel so uncomfortable when things weren't resolved, and even pursue harder. Come on, we have to talk about this. Which would only, you know, feel controlling to the other person or pressuring them when they were already triggered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to loop in our children for a minute, that is something we are so passionate about with our daughter, is that she can witness, even, yes, as a young toddler, we have to start now, right? It can't be just when they're 4 or 5. Now we want her to observe, okay, tension is building. Maybe we're disagreeing on something. Maybe one of us got triggered by something. We want to be able to recognize what's happening, de-escalate things, and make sure she sees repair. Like, that is the thing we shout from the rooftops to couples on online. We do like a lot of reels on that. Like, make sure our kids see some repair. That is something we need to see as children, that, okay, we can disagree. We can, you know, no matter how much personal development work we do, we might get triggered by each other. There might be a miscommunication and we get frustrated, but it's okay. The relationship is okay. Our family is all right. Like, I think that's where a lot of fear can come in for people, is like this lack of security and safety of, does conflict mean we're not okay? Does conflict mean there's no love? You know, because they'll even witness the parents not talking for 3 days and just being cold. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's such an uncomfortable environment to be in. So I went on a little tangent there if you want to ask some specifics. And Aaron, you want to?
Well, yeah, I want to add something there. As my journey, not just personally, but for the number of couples that we've coached, in the amount of men that I talk to Jocelyn's point, like, it's all patterns, right? So I wouldn't even personally say I think all of them come from our childhood and when and how we grew up. That has a lot to do with how we bond, attachment styles, how, creating a secure base. But there is a whole other world that sort of gets magnified. Like, you take that, and then you also have your own individual, like, personality types. Like, for example, I'm a very high level of agreeableness. And then so as I got older, as I progressed to being an adult, my level of not expressing my needs or feeling like I couldn't stand up or set boundaries because of my wanting to feel accepted or to agree with people, to fit in, to belong, that created a pattern for me as I got older. So that's kind of more of a like a shadow rather than like an inner child wound. So I think a lot of men are resistant to, well, where does that come from your childhood or the inner child, and, you know, probing questions about going back that far, when it could be something more so when you're an adult. Like, for me, a lot of my patterns come from high school and college and in my early 20s when I was very unsuccessful with dating, I was broken up with, I was cheated on. So my patterns that I move forward with Jocelyn were sort of magnified by those events, not necessarily something from my childhood. So wherever it comes from, I don't want specifically men or couples to get stuck in, well, where does that come from? In some cases, it doesn't matter at first. The recognition of what pattern do we have? And then what role do I individually play in that pattern continuing? And then ultimately, what barrier is that pattern to creating the life that we want together? Conscious parenting, conscious marriage. And to me, that forward-looking perspective is much easier to have men step into because we know what the outcome is. We have a collaborative vision, and if we're going to get there, we have to uncollapse these patterns. And by doing that, we progress. We add to our love account. We add to our collaboration. We add to my trust that what Jocelyn is bringing forth is for a mutual benefit for what we want together. Then I can get to a place of, hey, let's look at further, deeper patterns. Probably has something to do with a shadow or an inner child. At that point, I think men are much more interested in going that far back. But initially, I think if you look forward together, it's just, what are the patterns and how do we more effectively overcome them and put in new ones?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I think that honestly, for any person, it requires a sort of, personally for me, I'm not just sitting around being like, wow, you know, my childhood was a doozy. I am actually also a very agreeable person, or used to be, because I had to be agreeable. I was very codependent. I watched a codependent marriage with my mom and dad, where my dad absolutely had to say, like, whatever it was that would make my mom keep her cool, like, stay chill, stay relaxed, because when she wasn't, it was unpleasant for everybody in the household. And that was like an ongoing daily experience of like, nobody rock the boat, everybody just, you know, do what they need to do, like, please don't create a disruption, right? That that created that sort of what you called agreeableness and your personality type. I don't necessarily think that people are designed for being agreeable or being like people pleasers. I always call it the disease to please. I definitely think that's a conditioned behavior because we're designed free people from birth, and no one is meant to be owned or controlled. It's absolutely also a coping mechanism to feel safe and secure. You wanted to feel a sense of belonging from a biological standpoint of needing to feel safety and security. So it stems from infancy, but it absolutely with the shadow commentary, I totally agree with that. And I do think that it's a combination of everything. And I think that without a vision or without a need, it's very rare for people to do that kind of work and sort of figure out the context of their day-to-day behaviors, unless their goal is, okay, I want to be a more aware person, or I want to be a parent with awareness to the what and why behind what I think, what I do, how I behave with my children, how I respond to them and to life around me, as well as to my husband or to my wife. I think as a conscious parent, that's what I teach. That's my goal for people, to understand their behavior. But of course, without the goal of, I want to be a conscious parent, I want to respond differently to my kids than I was responded to, or I want to, like you were saying, Jocelyn, I want to make sure my children see repair. I want to make sure that also my children, again, from this biological standpoint, like we're really wired to need to feel safety, right? Like there was this really cool thing I watched about how the lion, right? Like after chasing a gazelle, the gazelle, once it's safe and it survives, its body literally goes back to being regulated. It's like, okay, cool. I'm no longer in danger. I'm not going to die. People obviously are not like that. We can carry anxiety with us after the event is gone for 10 years, right? Like our actual body systems are still on overdrive. We're still in fight or flight or fawn or freeze from something that happened long, long ago. And then they kind of like get compacted, right? Like we get a ton of these little events that happen and we store them in the body, which is really fascinating. But sometimes I wish we could be like the gazelle, like something happens. Okay, we're safe now. We can get back into a regulated state of physical being. But when our children, to comment on what you were saying about the need for our children to see repair, healthy coping with, you know, tension, arguments, conflict in general, I think that exactly what you said is so true. Like, you know, we do feel unsafe in those environments where there's tension, where our heart rate is like rising and we're literally going into a state of fight or flight. My parents, absolutely same dynamic, Tommy, same dynamic. And for me, it is hugely important, okay, to recognize that when that's happening, like this is not an emergency. My body does not need to be responding like this is an emergency. But where does that come from? Well, if we're not lovable, right? Like if we're in this deep state of insecurity, which is often what causes an argument, someone says something or does something that leads us to feel insecure and our ego comes to the surface, the root of all of that is I'm not lovable. And the root of that, the fear around that is if I'm not lovable as an infant, I could die. My parent would abandon me. And so it's crazy to me how like everything almost stems back to that very original need for connection and lovability from the time that we're born. As crazy as that sounds, like it literally puts us into a survival state when somebody at age 30, we think doesn't like us, right? Or doesn't like something that we did and therefore doesn't like us anymore, or doesn't love us anymore, or doesn't accept us for who we are. I just think it's so fascinating. But again, so when we go back into like the conversation of seeing our parents repair or allowing our children to see us repair with our partners, it's really about getting them back into a safe zone. And then on top of that, like your guys' podcast introduction or bio says, giving them the skills that many of us were not taught, letting them see us repair. It gives them the skills moving forward to one, not fear conflict, but then to understand like, okay, I'm safe though. We can disagree and still be safe. I remember in my early 20s, like,
Do you mind if I jump in on something right there, actually? Oh,
I would love to. Yeah, I would love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of reading and research and getting clear on a lot of the points that you're alluding to, right? And one of the big shocking ones for us is, well, what, being a conscious parent, like, what is it that we really want to offer to Sky as she heads out into this world? And everything you're talking about, right? It's creating the secure base, secure attachment for her relationships going forward. And I do love this analogy that I heard. And it's, if you think about a child that goes towards a playground, right? When they're small, they're going to see like going inside the fence of the playground as a very sort of scary thing, right? There are older kids, there's jungle gyms, there's slides, you could get hurt. And so what you do as a parent, and this is just our philosophy, is you provide that safety and security for them that you can go inside the fence. And then you can tell them like, hey, why don't you go out like 5 feet from me, right? So they go a little bit further, maybe they fall down and they come back. And then so you hear them out, you console them. And then, but then you encourage them to go a little bit further. Hey, what about that slide? What about those older kids? And so it's providing this secure base where kids know that they can be fully accepted and loved by you. And at the same time, you encourage them to step out into the unknown. You know, the majority of life is actually this kind of scary unknown place. And we think that we can, through acquiring of information, gain in our understanding of what's known from the unknown. I think we kind of delude ourselves to think about, as adults, we've moved a lot of the unknown world into the known. And I think there's a illusion of safety there. When I look in my past, though I felt secure and protected, I didn't necessarily get built into myself the courage, the taking risks, the belief in myself to go do challenging things and to fail and to go out into a scary world and feel prepared with the tools and the skills to face whatever life is going to have, because it's going to be very scary. There's going to be people that are not going to have my best interests at heart. So I think to be able to provide that place for kids to feel safe, but be empowered to go out and try things that are scary, to fail, to bump up against people that are not going to have their best interest, and have the tools to more so be a lion out in the world and not just a sheep or a gazelle that is unable to stand up for itself. That's really our goal, to be a conscious parent. So could Sky show up in the world of things that are not in her best interest, or a world that isn't going towards the right place, or to start a business that's scary, or to put everything at risk, or to come up against, you know, certain people, and know that she can face whatever comes?
Can I jump
and
in on
be
that?
Yeah, be like a lion in the face of what might happen, at the same time be able to show up with compassion and with love, but have that knowing inside of her. That's the type of person that I want to be able to guide forward.
And I'm fired up by what you're saying. And I just want to link that to what I was mentioning about conflict, because in relationships, whether it be friendships or with, you know, parent to child, or of course in romantic relationships, which is what we focus on, there are going to be times of disagreement. There are going to be times where, you know, again, no matter how much we're working on ourselves, we just, our threshold is lower that day. And so we want Sky to be able to navigate conflict in relationships. And a lot of people, a lot of people will just abandon them. I mean, I've had friends who were so uncomfortable with conflict that they would just rather cut the person out than deal with it. Or of course, in marriages, you know, it's like, oh, too much conflict, I don't want to deal with this, and I'm out. So yeah, that's something we really are going to focus on with our baby girl, is having her understand and navigate conflict in relationships.
Yes. And I love all of that so much. I think one of the things that, again, stands out to me is that you just said what I was going to say earlier. In my early 20s, I was that person that as soon as there was any type of conflict, I would feel like this overwhelming sense of, I guess, shame, right? Like where I would just basically avoid it altogether. I'd be like, okay, well, that's the end, right? Or even when Tommy and I first got together and there would be this like any sort of conflict or tension, I would think, well, great. You know, like this, I thought this was perfect. Thought this guy was wonderful, like perfect fit for me and Donovan. And maybe not, maybe not, maybe, you know, because of one conflict, I would, based on my conditioning and what I saw and what I was taught to do amidst conflict, that's the only option, right? Whereas Tommy, although his parents didn't necessarily face things head on, they never left each other, right? Like nobody ever fleed. They were just like, there's conflict. That's a normal part of life and relationships. So it's been a really healthy learning curve for me in a lot of great ways. Like, and especially it's been an extra healthy thing for us together to be able to demonstrate that for our children, that like, okay, we can have tension, we can have conflict. And Tommy used to be like, okay, well, I don't want to talk about this if Donovan's around. Like, I don't want us to have a discussion about this because obviously I'm worked up or you're worked up and I don't want to talk about this now. And I would say we don't have to talk about this in front of Donovan, but I definitely think he needs to see that it's normal for us to disagree and mm-hmm. to still love each other, to still be in love, to still be affectionate to each other, to still, and to have this sort of like, again, healthy coming together, even amidst conflict, especially though after, as opposed to like you were saying, like stonewalling, just walking around each other. And energetically, it's so interesting that people think that our children are not aware of that and so in tune with us and in tune with all of the relationship dynamics in the household. Don't you think it's so funny that people are like in their mind thinking that that's the best thing to do? Like, we'll just avoid it long enough and then it'll go away, as if our children aren't going to pick up on the underlying tension and lack of warmth and love and connection.
And I think just to share like some steps that couples can focus on both for their marriage, but also mm-hmm. so that they're instilling it on their kiddos mm-hmm. for that conflict. So like, let's say there's tension, there's an argument between you and your partner. Okay. After that, you might not be immediately ready to have what we call a repair conversation, which we have a whole process for. That's what a lot of our content and resources are about, is like the actual conflict repair process. Is that if we can, within our relationship, and show our children that when we're in that cool off period, we are doing two things. We're reflecting mm-hmm. on, okay, what was this about? Was this, you know, to what you were talking about earlier in the podcast, was this a trigger? And if so, what is that related to? Okay, was it an unmet expectation? Was it a miscommunication? Like, was my threshold lower? Being able to identify more of the root cause. What was this really about? And when we reflect and get the lesson, it's more meaningful than just a generic apology. So we're reflecting and we are looking for where we can take responsibility. What can I take responsibility for? From anything, like, oh, my tone of voice, you know, maybe my tone of voice wasn't that respectful, or, you know, I can take responsibility that I didn't express what I was needing and I got upset at my partner. I can take responsibility for storming out of the room, looking at what was your part in either the conflict occurring or escalating. And if you can, you know, again, do this within your own partnership, but also tell your kiddos, you know, hey, we're okay. We're just taking some time to cool off. And you know what? Mom is reflecting on, you know, what this was about and what responsibility. And of course, age appropriate. It depends on if they're three versus if they're eight. But I think those are some keys to focus on in that post-conflict stage. And again, we have more resources that like dive into some specific steps. But a lot of kids just see their parents not talk, be quiet, maybe even just give each other one word answers, you know, very hostile. And then eventually like things, maybe
you're
a couple days.
Just back doing yeah. your normal day-to-day activity.
Yeah. And there's no like, okay, what's happened here? Are we actually okay? So anyway, I think having a couple of steps, the reflection and the responsibility.
Well, more so just linking back to the overall outcome is to say, what is it that we're co-creating as a couple together and as a family? What patterns are getting in the way of that? Unless you actually do this reflect and you take your responsibility for your side, how you impacted your partner, how your actions keep in the cycle of the pattern, then there's no way to get out of the pattern, put in the new tools and skills and steps so you can better progress towards the vision. So if you step over that, that's why you pretty much stay in a cycle. Hence why not only the repair process, but this reflection, doing this together, and it will help your kids in the future too. Like, they're going to go out there, they'll make mistakes, they'll get into relationships, they'll do things well-intended that have impact. But until you are able to come together and identify what role did I play here, where is there a pattern, where can I break out of it to better suit the outcome I have for myself or for my future relationship.
Beautiful. And we've only got a little bit of time left, so I want to cover a couple of other things. First of all, before I actually move on, I love that you said in the reflecting piece to look where we can take responsibility. I think that that's the epitome of vulnerability, and that's where a lot of people struggle, because being vulnerable, saying that you're wrong about something or apologizing, again, stems from this conditioning that if to make a mistake means that we are bad, that we are not lovable. And so it's really painful for a lot of people. But I think that if we are able to acknowledge our ego and say, okay, I see you're trying to protect me, but I'm going to take the first step, especially if you have a conflict with your partner where maybe it seems like they had a bigger hand, I guess, in the conflict, for you to take the first step and just say, like, hey, here's where I'm responsible for the way that we handled that. I think it really de-escalates the situation in so many ways, because allows the other person to feel like, okay, wait, you know, like it's okay for me to say something that I did as well, like normalize that we're imperfect, you know, like it's okay. And I think that's something you guys talk about too in your podcast, like that you don't strive for perfection. It's about growth. I think that's beautiful. So I want to talk a little bit about the love account that you mentioned in the beginning, because I really think this mirrors what I teach as a conscious parenting coach, teaching people to view their children as whole people from infancy that we're in relationship with, that we're not in an ownership dynamic with, where we really consider their perspective wholly from the day they're born. And we want to continue to consider it as things go on and as they grow, where their preferences matter to us, little ways of recognizing them matter to us. I always refer to this quote that says, children ask us every day in a million small ways, do you hear me? Do you see me? Do I matter? And their behavior is often a reflection of our response. I think, and this is, I guess, the last thing I want you guys to talk about, I think this is a perfect mirror to marriage as well. I think that the way that our partner is behaving, so to speak, in our marriage is almost directly correlated, or can be directly correlated, to those three questions. Do you see me? Do you hear me? Do I matter? And all the little ways that we answer those questions to our partners throughout the day. And I know that it can get more difficult the more needs you have to meet, right? The more children you have, or like you guys are managing this business together, you have so many different things that you're working on together. And so it can get increasingly difficult as you take on more things in your marriage or your partnership. I would love to know how, like, just maybe a few of the ways that you would recommend to partners in terms of like filling up that love tank, meeting everybody's needs, or like, what are some of the number one things that you see when working with couples that improve this connection, this feeling of being seen, feeling important to one another?
Yeah, well, you know, as we are adulting, right, we have a lot of responsibilities on our plate. It can be easy to get in a management state of life. You wake up and immediately, you know, the kiddos are wanting you. You've got to be getting ready for work, or just getting the kids. Like, there's a lot that you're doing, and then you have your work day, and then it's now the end of the day and it's bath time. And it can feel like there are less moments together to nurture us, to prioritize us. And before kiddos, right, there's a lot more time. And so we find that parents have to be especially intentional. That's the word. intentional with the mini moments, you know, that we aren't having maybe 4 uninterrupted hours together as often as we would like. So instead, how can we have these little mini moments? Like we even like to think of, you're going to be walking by your partner. So instead of just walking by, graze their back, you know, or you're going to be having a conversation while you're cooking and the kids are, you know, my girl, she's often like pulling at my feet. And so instead of just, you know, talking, why don't we pause and just give each other a kiss on the cheek or make eye contact for a second and asking intentional questions as well, not just the typical, how was your day, that just seems routine. It's like, you know, we even did a podcast on this week of like, hey, asking a good question that shows you're interested in them. Hey, how's it been going with blank, you know, either a project they're working on or a situation they're working through with the kiddos or a family member, and really showing that interest. So if you can remember the phrase like mini moments that are the deposits, and you want to be making more deposits than withdrawals. So that's where you can get into this cycle of you're being shorter with each other, more prone to arguments, is because there's an imbalance. You're making more withdrawals than you are deposits. And if those of you who are listening want to learn more about this, because I know that this podcast episode is starting to wrap up, that's what we cover a lot in both our podcast, our Instagram, our resources. So we can give you some more tangible ways to do that.
Perfect. Yeah, I love the mini moments. And it's something that I'm working on too, like just constantly. It's so interesting too that I do this with my children, but we get into, at least for me personally, I feel like we can so easily get like separate the two and kind of forget that we have the exact same sort of needs as our children, and almost like every conflict is just a bid for connection. Like people are just wanting to be connected with and understood and seen on a deeper level. And there's this really beautiful excerpt from a book that I just recently read that talked about how even if you're ticking all the boxes, meeting all of the physical needs, maybe you're doing all of the things like technically that are somebody's, let's say, in alignment with their love language or whatever, if you're not in tune with your children and with your partner and deeply curious about them, it almost like it doesn't matter. It's almost like that's really the key, that making sure that your partner knows, just like I hope for you to be making sure your children know, that you're deeply curious about them, you're deeply interested in them. That's something I've learned. I don't know if you guys love Harville Hendrick's work, but that's something I learned from reading Getting the Love You Want. It's a book I really, really love and recommend to people that are married especially, but if you're not in a relationship, it's a great read before you enter a relationship. But that deep curiosity, I think, is an amazing foundation for the mini moments, for cultivating this long-term lasting connection. I mentioned a couple of times now that your podcast description includes the fact that we don't have these skills for resolving conflict, for working through them, for communicating clearly to prevent them. And I think that a lot of people get into marriage with this high expectation without considering what was actually modeled for us, and many of us not having that skill set, again, get ourselves into these like sort of premeditated resentments that I call expectations, where we expect our partner to do X, Y, or Z, or to be X, Y, or Z, or to respond in a specific way, when it's honestly just not realistic based on what was modeled for them, what they learned, who taught them or didn't teach them how to respond or how to clearly communicate or, you know, have that sort of emotional maturity. Is this something that would be, you know, a perfect, I guess, like learning opportunity with a lot of the things that you guys provide, all of your resources for people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, expectations is a big kind of element of what we talk about around preventing and navigating conflict. Even in our couples workshop, which we do in-person workshops in Arizona, we have an expectations exercise. Oh, and it's in our online program as well. But yeah, exactly what you're saying. We find that couples aren't transparent enough with themselves around their expectations, but also with each other. And we don't think of expectations as commands or, you know, just dictating to them what we want. It's about being aware of, oh, interesting. My brain has a certain way that it imagines this going, whether that be marriage, like at a global level, or this vacation, right? I just did a reel for us on doing all the planning and prep work and packing for vacation, and how some partners can get frustrated because it feels like it's just expected that they do that. So there can be both these global expectations that we need to reconcile, like what do we believe partners should do for each other? What does love look like? How do we parent together? But then there are also very isolated situational expectations, like we're going on a vacation, or who handles discipline what way, or who does the dishes. So expectations is just something to be very aware of, and realizing that we just need to be conscious of what our brain is imagining, envisioning, expecting, and make sure we've either talked about that and created an agreement or adjusting, right? So it's like we can do two things. We can create agreements for the expectations, or we can adjust the expectation. So yeah, big topic that we could definitely support couples in further in our content.
Amazing. Well, I just want to give you guys a huge thank you and like a virtual hug for spending this time with me. I am so excited to share this with everybody listening, and I truly hope it enlightens you and empowers you, uplifts you. Please check out Meet the Freemans on Instagram. They have just a plethora of amazing content out there, and I know it would serve you in your marriage, even if you're like, we're not even really having a hard time. My marriage is great. I think developing that vision, like Aaron talked about, and Jocelyn, is key for the long-term thriving marriage that all of us want. So thank you guys so much again, and thank you for everybody listening.
Thanks for having us, and thanks everyone for listening.